The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, October 6th, 2025. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Dr. Michael Mann, climatologist, geophysicist, director of the Center of Science, Sustainability, and the Media at University of Pennsylvania, and also perhaps his co-author, Professor Peter Hotez, professor of pediatrics and molecular virology and microbiology biology at Baylor College of Medicine. It's Monday, folks. They have co-authored a book, Science Under Siege, How to Fight the Five Most Powerful Forces That Threaten Our World. Meanwhile, also on the program, ICE continues its assault on Chicago as Mayor Brandon Johnson makes city property off limits for any federal immigration work. Meanwhile, Trump shopping for military force to invade Portland as a MAGA judge issues a temporary restraining order. Illinois sues the Trump administration over the National Guard deployment after reports of torture and mistreatment. Israel deports at least 300 of the flotilla activists, still holding at last count nearly 140 who are, by all accounts, hostages held by the Israeli government. South Carolina judge who was targeted by Stephen Miller has her house burned down. Supreme Court rejects Ghislaine Maxwell's appeal. Not uncoincidentally, Mike Johnson still has not sat latest elected Democratic congresswoman or also known as the 218th vote on releasing the Epstein files. Trump claims over the weekend that the United States has killed more Venezuelans in a boat. It is day six of the government shutdown. Vaguely seems like the Democrats may be winning the messaging fight. Roy Cooper breaks fundraising numbers in North Carolina Senate race. And speaking of polling, California Prop 50, which is the redistricting proposition, now polling at 54%. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It is
Fun Day Monday.
And as you can tell by the enthusiasm in Emma's voice, we're certainly feeling the fun.
And the sirens in the background.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Hopefully not for us.
Thanks for joining us at the beginning of the week. The weekend was a total crap show.
Yep.
Really starting Friday afternoon. I think I spent like the next 16 hours straight on Twitter, so that would have taken me to about 4 in the morning. That tracks with my lack of sleep. We have more information on the ICE attack on that Chicago apartment building. It appears that the landlords called ICE because they had many, many, many code violations, and are now looking to evict all of the residents there because, of course, ICE came in and destroyed the place. So
you're playing the game called capitalism.
Yeah.
I would also say insurance fraud on top of that.
Well, fraud is a part of the whole deal, it seems like. There's been some good local reporting on this. I think this is called Block Club Chicago. It's a nonprofit paper there. But they basically reported that the ownership, it traces back to this Wisconsin-based investor, Trinity Flood. And according to public records, Flood is facing a $27 million foreclosure lawsuit for not making loan payments on three South Shore properties she bought for $18 million in 2020. So maybe a COVID deal. The city also filed suit in February against her LLC over 15 building code violations at the South Shore Drive property dating back to 2023. So they're trying to clear out the property by neglecting it, it seems like, because it's quite expensive. And what better way to do that than to have ICE come in, terrorize your tenants, and trash the place?
Very reminiscent of the last report that we had of Trend Agua infiltrating an apartment building. That one, I think, was in Ohio, was
Colorado.
It?
Colorado.
Colorado in the run-up to the election. Meanwhile, in Chicago, ICE has gone completely out of control. We have a lot of clips that we'll play later in the program, including the Chicago Police Department getting tear gassed by ICE. We have a lot of footage of Chicagoans pushing back against ICE in multiple different ways. But just to give you a sense of how completely out of control, I mean, unprofessional, forget about. Yeah. These people are just thugs. They're thugs. They're goons. They don't care about public safety whatsoever. As far as they're concerned, they're in enemy territory. Mm-hmm. Now, this ICE guy stuck in traffic, it's possible that there was a scooter in front of him that had stopped on purpose. Regardless, there's absolutely no justification for what you're about to see. You should also know this is across the street from a school, and a two-year-old who was in a nearby car had to be taken to the hospital because they were overcome with this tear gas. Play this clip. Look at the white car. That's ICE. Mass man attempts to throw tear gas, basically throws it on himself.
Fuck you. Bounce off the mirror or something? Look at that.
They're still throwing tear gas from multiple cars.
And this stuff lingers.
Oh my gosh. I mean, for hours, if you've
you
ever
see people, you know, behind them trying to get out of the way because the wind's blowing in yeah. there.
If you're ever even close to tear gas, I mean, just in covering protests, I've got some, you know, in my airspace, and you're like, I was not even in the thick of it. And like teary, red eyes for hours and hours. Imagine if you were right near there.
Imagine if you're a two-year-old, you're yep. sent to the hospital. It's not like ICE has any compunction about harming children. We've seen multiple occasions where they have left children along the side of a highway without their parents. They have shoved children out of the way when they're ripping their parents away from them, in whether it's like hallways in front of courtrooms. This is a clip. This was from Friday. Chicago alderperson Jesse Fuentes is at the hospital. And this is posted by Chicago Tribune reporter Jake Sheridan's X account. Here are ICE agents confronting the alderperson, and they want a person in the hospital. The hospital is private property. And so the alderman is asking, or alderperson, I should say, is asking for a warrant.
Burn your logs.
He has constitutional rights.
No.
He has constitutional rights. Do you have a sign?
No.
You
need to leave.
Warrant for me?
Turn around. You're a dream. Turn around and leave.
He is under
arrest. I'm going to arrest you.
You are going to be placed under arrest.
Do you have a sign?
You need to leave.
That's a guy who's acting out of a little bit of anger.
Can somebody go in the hallway and get Lisa for me? This is an older person who's being under arrest. I need my other staffer who's in the hallway by registration to come here, please.
You are hurting. I am asking.
Can somebody get my staffer, please?
This is a hospital. Do you have a signed judicial warrant for him? I am asking. I did not touch you.
He told you to leave.
I did not touch you. I asked you if you had a sign to get a warrant for him. It is very simple. It is very simple. That man has constitutional rights. I did not touch you. It is a public space. I am not trespassing. I am asking you, do you have a signed judicial warrant? I am asking. Do you have a signed judicial warrant for him? It is a question, sir. You are an agent. You are a federal agent.
We do not need a warrant for somebody.
You are a federal agent. I am an elected official.
Guy wearing a mask for the people listening.
Do you have a signed judicial warrant? I'm the alderman of this
ward. Can you keep recording? I need a call.
Oh, that's when the guy finds out that he's just arrested an alderman.
And, well, whoopsie. And that's when they know they're being videotaped. Let's just, like, yes. There are a bunch of other instances when you're talking about the mistreatment of children, that horrific ICE raid on the building that we just spoke about. The reporting was about how some of the children were naked outside. Sometimes children sleep naked. That's something that happens. And there's not video footage of it. So you have all these right-wing bots casting aspersions on the reporting, and it's just absolute insanity, because when we have these recordings, they dismiss it entirely anyway.
We've got a lot of other clips that we're going to be playing in the context of the show.
All that alderman did was ask to see a warrant. I mean, God. Even in the decades of propaganda that's been on TV, we know our rights.
Is this number seven here? Oh, no, this is, yeah, we'll play, let's play this. This is number 13, right? Yeah, let's play this one. We had mentioned the other day that you don't necessarily have to ally yourself with cops in these protests. Although, also be clear, ICE is now spending millions of dollars putting out ads. This is according to the AP. They're spending millions of dollars on television advertising in select metro areas around the country aimed at recruiting local officers frustrated with their city's restrictions on immigration enforcement into Donald Trump's mass deportation efforts. So they are targeting cops because they know that this is going to be a problem. Remember, they have $30 billion, $30 billion to hire 10,000 more deportation officers, thugs. That's part of the $77 billion that the Trump regime is looking for to spend broadly on ICE. The rest of it all goes to private prison companies. But in Chicago, don't know the circumstances, but it's quite clear from the video that this is the case. ICE maced, or I should say tear gassed, Chicago Police Department officers. Take a look at this.
Understand? They just tear gas you. They don't give a fuck about you either. Why you been talking to them?
And there's other. Do we have that other clip? There was a second clip of that too. Nevertheless, a bunch of them, not just those two. There's another clip with at least a half a dozen other Chicago PD who were clearly tear gassed. And that's the message for the cops. ICE doesn't care about you either. They're certainly not there to protect your community.
They're there to replace you.
I mean, the abolish the police, I guess, and just replace them with
Stephen Miller's Gestapo.
Federal Gestapo.
Well, it's also get on board or get out of the way. Get on board with, like, the machinery that has been gifted to police departments over the past two decades, the leftover basically wartime machinery that we've given out to police departments. Now we're superseding those folks to just have a federal Gestapo do it instead. But
yeah. What's the whole point of doing this for cops if you're just going to have Stephen Miller's stormtroopers?
I mean, it really is. Like, this is the end result of the erosion of our rights, and we've brought the war on terror here to domestic soil, and immigrants and folks in those communities as well are the ones on the front lines.
In a minute, we're going to be talking to Dr. Michael Mann, climatologist, geophysicist, director of the Center of Science and Sustainability and the Media at University of Pennsylvania, co-author of Science Under Siege, How to Fight the Five Most Powerful Forces That Threaten Our World. First, a couple of words from our sponsors. This episode of The Majority Report is brought to you by Wildgrain. They're a new sponsor. And it's awesome stuff. What did Brian call it? Pa-bake? I can't remember. Wildgrain is
Par-bake.
It is the first bake from frozen subscription box for artisanal breads, seasonal pastries, and fresh pastas. All the items conveniently bake in 25 minutes or less. This is not store-bought stuff. Wildgrain uses a slow fermentation process that's easier on your belly. It's richer in nutrients and antioxidants. It's made with simple ingredients you can pronounce. I will also tell you, this stuff is absolutely 100% delicious. Wildgrain's boxes are fully customizable. They're adding seasonal and limited-time products for you to enjoy. In addition to their classic box, they now feature a gluten-free box and a plant-based box. I've made, Saul, a bunch of croissants that we got. Some apple cider donuts.
Very nice.
Some ravioli with squash and I can't remember what kind of cheese, like a ricotta cheese, I think, which was amazing. But it's like it's homemade pasta. But they have not Legos, but like the sort of I can't remember what the name of it is, but they're like cookies that are ridges on it. I don't know. But great bread, really fantastic, super easy. You get it in a box. Almost all the stuff in there is recyclable. You put it in your freezer and you pull it out when you need it. You drop it on a tray. 20 minutes later, 15 minutes later, 25 minutes later, you have fresh baked bread. It's amazing. This fall, treat yourself and your family to warm sourdough breads and seasonal baked goods from Wildgrain. Rumor has it they have apple cider donuts. I can confirm.
Yes.
And pumpkin cinnamon biscuits. So get them before these seasonal items sell out. For a limited time, Wildgrain is offering our listeners $30 off their first box, plus free croissants in every box when you go to wildgrain.com/majority to start your subscription. Warm croissants
may be
the absolute best thing you've ever eaten. And you heard me here. Free croissants in every box. $30 off your first box when you go to wildgrain.com/majority. That's wildgrain.com/majority. Or you can use promo code majority at checkout. Don't miss their seasonal products. Do yourself a favor. Try it once. I guarantee you will enjoy this. It's delicious. And it's so much. I can't even compare it to actually cooking bread from scratch because I've never done that.
You don't make croissants?
No. Yeah.
Sounds hard.
I know. It's surprising. I know I come off as a make my own croissant type of guy.
You always wear a chef hat when you're walking in here.
Yeah. Oh, all right. Let's talk about something else that is one of my favorite things, too. Of course, I now wear my sweatshirt is almost like a daily. My hoodie is my almost like daily thing because it is awesome. It works in every temperature. It's like lightweight, but warm. It is warm, but it's also cool. It is a Cozy Earth hoodie. And they have joggers that are exactly the same material, and they're fantastic. They maintain their form, I guess. I don't know how to say that. In a way that, like, you don't feel embarrassed walking around in them. They look like pants. They're structured.
Yeah.
But they're also incredibly soft. And they're cool, but they're warm. I don't know really. The sheets are also exactly the same way. They are temperature regulating. They are guaranteed to give you a comfortable night's sleep. They're made from viscose, which is from bamboo. They naturally wick away heat and moisture from your body, help you sleep several degrees cooler, which is extremely important to me. They have something called the Bubble Cuddle Blanket. I've not tried this, but it is an ultra-soft blanket that has a combination of comfort and style. It is a midweight faux fur blanket that's great for lounging anywhere in your home. I think my kids and my cats would like that. Honestly, the bedding is fantastic, incredibly soft, incredibly temperature regulating. The hoodie and the joggers, super comfortable. When the bedding, 100-night sleep trial. You try them out. If you don't love them, you return them hassle-free. It's got a 10-year warranty. Because, frankly, when you feel this comfortable when you're sleeping, you'd want it to last for 10 years. Thanks to Cozy Earth for sponsoring this episode. Head to CozyEarth.com. Use our code MajorityReport, one word, for up to 20% off. That's CozyEarth.com. Code is MajorityReport. And if you get a post-purchase survey, tell them you heard about Cozy Earth right here on the Majority Report. Home isn't just where you live. It's how you feel. Cozy Earth. Use the code Majority Report. We'll put all that information in the podcast and YouTube description. Quick break. When we come back, Dr. Michael Mann. We are back, Sam Seder, Emma Vigeland on the Majority Report. It is a pleasure to welcome back to the program Dr. Michael Mann, climatologist, geophysicist, and director of the Center for Science, Sustainability, and the Media at the University of Pennsylvania, co-author with Dr. Peter Hotez, professor of pediatrics and molecular virology and microbiology at Baylor College of Medicine. Their latest book, Science Under Siege, How to Fight the Five Most Powerful Forces That Threaten Our World. Professor, I know that Dr. Hotez may be joining us in a bit. It is great to see you again. We have had many conversations over the years about, in particular, I mean, both about climate change, but about specifically, I know you and I have had this conversation for quite some time about scientists' role in this sort of new world, which is now probably 10, 12, 14, 20 years old of dealing in mostly in the context of climate change, but the I guess the palette has extended to all sort of science in a broad stroke. To pushing back on this, tell us a little bit. You've written about the five P's, but before we get there, just tell us about, like, over the course of your career, how the environment has changed, not literally the environment, but the environment to talk about the environment.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. It's great to be back with you. And indeed, over the years, we've talked many times about climate disinformation and this concerted effort by bad actors to sort of cloud the public discourse to prevent us from taking the needed action. And, you know, it was sort of PTSD for me because the attacks on me, the attacks on climate science go back more than 2.5 decades, really. In my case, back to the late 1990s when we published the now well-known hockey stick curve that really laid bare the reality and threat of human-caused warming that made it a threat to fossil fuel interests and those promoting their agenda. And so for me, back, you know, about 5 years ago, it was PTSD to watch my friends, my colleagues in the public health space, Peter Hotez, my co-author, Tony Fauci, and others come under attack by folks, the very same folks using the same tactics, looking to discredit them and their science for ideological reasons. And so I reached out to Peter. I felt like we had lessons to provide to them. We became friends and we decided we had a book to write here about, you know, as you allude to, the sort of metastasization of what was once this sort of, to use a public health analogy, a localized cancer that is now metastasized to impact not just all of science or any areas of science that are policy relevant, but our you know, fact-based discourse itself.
How much do you think this, I mean, it seems to me there's sort of like two different players who sort of cross over, at least in the genesis of this, because, you know, and I only know this quote because it included in a book I wrote in 2006 from Gertrude Himmelfarb, who is Irving Kristol's wife, Bill Kristol's mother.
Interesting.
In 2005, she was talking about the mechanistic and reductionist interpretation of all human life, including its emotional, intellectual dimensions in the name of Darwinism. This is more than science. It's scientism. Mm. Scientism with a vengeance. Science that is now presumed to be the only access to comprehensive truth. They have been attacking in the conservative movement science for decades and decades because this narrative ultimately helps them, whether it is we shouldn't have lead in the gasolines, we shouldn't pour mercury into our water.
Yeah.
And so when climate change comes along, there's a like sort of almost like a pre-built mechanism to attack the science.
Absolutely. Yeah, there was a pre-existing playbook. It was the playbook that was used by, in all of these other cases you cite, it was used by the gun lobby. Most famously and most relevantly, it was used by the tobacco industry. Yes. And there is a document, there is a line from the reports that the tobacco industry was forced to make public as part of a settlement with a number of states' attorneys general back in the 1990s. They were forced to provide over these internal documents, one of which I believe it was Brown and Williamson, but this applied to all of the tobacco companies, the tobacco industry. Doubt is our product. That's a line from the tobacco industry. And what they meant there was they need to sow doubt and confusion about what their own internal research actually validated. Their own internal research showed that their product was killing people. That was bad for their business model. And so they hid that from the public. The fossil fuel industry used exactly that same playbook. And in fact, there are now famously internal documents. ExxonMobil document from 1982, where their own scientists referred to the potential consequences of continued extraction and burning of fossil fuels as catastrophic. That wasn't Al Gore. That wasn't the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the UN. It was ExxonMobil's own scientists. And as we know, they came out with that report. ExxonMobil apologized and said they would do everything they could to. No, of course, we don't live in that universe, that alternative universe. No, they hid the report, and now we are bearing the brunt of that. If we had acted decades ago, we could have prevented a lot of the damage that we're now seeing. And Sam, you put your finger on something really important here, is, you know, what joins these things together? And we can talk about, you know, the lockdowns were a threat to the Koch brothers, the largest publicly held fossil fuel interest, and these libertarian funders of sort of the conservative echo chamber front groups and AstroTurf organizations and producers of misinformation and disinformation. So they had a specific reason to oppose climate action, but they also had a specific reason to oppose the public health messaging on COVID as the pandemic became, you know, the pandemic started up, because the lockdowns and stay at home orders, all of these things would, and they did, reduce fossil fuel usage, reduce transportation. They would slow down the economy. They would reduce demand for fossil fuels, and that would hurt their bottom line. And so they weaponized misinformation and disinformation to try to oppose those efforts. And ultimately, that rabble that they created, which was opposed to the messaging of public health scientists, would naturally become anti-vaxxers as well. And that was truly tragic. That, as Peter has pointed out, led to hundreds of thousands of unnecessary deaths here in the United States alone. But there's a larger thing here. And sorry, that's really what you put your finger on, which was a world without objective truth, a world without trusted messengers, a world without, you know, science-based policymaking is a world where the bad actors run free. And that's what they want. And that's what they've been working towards for a number of decades. And that, scarily enough, is where we are now.
Yeah, I would add, too, that there was a paper written by Sam Bagenstos, who is a professor at University of Michigan, on a lot of the COVID era sort of subsidies. And they found that, like, the polling on these subsidies, actually the value of these subsidies to people, at least as a political matter, was reduced dramatically, because those same interests that you're talking about, fossil fuel or just big money, wanted people back at work. And so diminishing the subsidies and stigmatizing them and keeping people safe, which meant less engaged with things on a day-to-day measure, or you've got to put protections in, was just not in their economic interests.
Yeah, so absolutely.
Let's turn to the five P's that you talk about, just to sort of organize where these threats come from and what we're getting from each one of these. I do want to talk to you about, like, sort of the, you know, and then you obviously you have a big part of, like, going forward. What are the strategies and tactics that we need to employ, and who needs to be employing those? But let's start with the first P, plutocrats. We've sort of touched on it a little bit. Expand on that.
Yeah. These are five P's in a pod, if you like. And the first of those P's, plutocrats. So these are the Elon Musks of the world. Elon Musk has, you know, bought Twitter and weaponized it as a massive sort of producer of and disseminator of misinformation and disinformation on climate, on COVID-19. It's become sort of a tool for these bad actors to spread their disinformation. Rupert Murdoch, another plutocrat who, of course, the News Corp, Fox News, Wall Street Journal editorial pages, his media empire is the largest media disseminator of misinformation and disinformation. By the way, Elon Musk's buyout of Twitter was leveraged by Saudi Arabia and Russia. Do you think that's a coincidence? It's not. Those are sort of two of the premier petrostates. They don't want climate action. They don't want us to move forward towards renewable energy. And they have weaponized social media using bot armies and troll farms to promote disinformation, to prevent, you know, aimed at preventing any public action here. There are other plutocrats as well. Many of them fund this massive infrastructure, the Koch brothers we mentioned, who fund this sort of libertarian infrastructure, these various organizations, front groups, misinformation, disinformation websites that are all aimed at pumping misinformation and disinformation out into the public sphere that opposes science-based messaging on climate or on COVID-19 or anything that in any way threatens their libertarian vision of the world, their agenda.
I have to say, I had forgotten. I don't know why it had never occurred to me that Russia, and for that matter, Saudi Arabia, but in particular, Russia, wouldn't have the same incentive structure as the Koch brothers. The price of oil that Russia sells is intimately tied to the price of oil that the Koch brothers are going to sell. And
they are a petrostate, Sam. That is their largest asset.
Of course. It's just that, like, because it's Russia, it hadn't occurred to me that they would operate in the same way, that it would be more, you know, to the extent that they want to destabilize things in the United States, it's not necessarily to no end. It is specifically they want to help the forces that will put more money in their pocket like anybody else. And
it's both. It's both. They want to do both of those things. So it's a twofer, if you like. And we talk about that in the book, destabilizing Western civilizations and enabling their business model at the same time.
And it depends on enclosure, right? I mean, just to stick on this for just a second, these are dinosaur companies, at least with the fossil fuels, that need to delay, as they've been doing for decades, concealing this information for their business model to continue. But it also
the dinosaur analogy, by the way, is a good one, because we're literally talking about fossil fuels that were buried 100 million years ago or more, and they're bringing them to the surface to burn them.
Yeah. Right. And it just is amazing to me how quickly these financial forces were able to completely overtake our communications channels and how easily an environment of full disinformation where nothing means anything or anything can mean anything abets a fascist project, because it creates such an advantage, or you can start the race so much earlier than everybody else who's catching up to the facts that would be relevant.
Yeah, well, you know, Emma, I think you've brought us to the last of the P's, the press. And by that, we mean the media writ large. And obviously the conservative media, you know, the Murdoch media empire, conservative news organizations that promote climate denialism, that promote anti-vax rhetoric. But also, we take aim in the book at the legacy media, the mainstream media, which is so guilty today of what we call performative neutrality, this idea that we have to elevate anti-science to the same level as the actual consensus of the world scientists, you know, balance in favor of accuracy. And, you know, on the pages of the Washington Post and the New York Times, you will find that sort of misinformation, disinformation, or framing that is advantageous to these bad actors, whether it's the New York Times on Sunday, this was a few weeks ago, a day when we are supposed to be sort of embracing solar energy as part of the clean energy transition. And they wrote, they published an op-ed about geoengineering. No, we don't have to reduce carbon emissions. We'll just pump particles into the stratosphere to block out the sun. What harm could possibly come from that? Ironically, yes, that's one way to try to cool down the earth. It actually does block some of the sun, so it makes solar energy even less viable. On Sunday, they published that. And the Washington Post and the New York Times have platformed the lab leak theory on many occasions, the lab leak theory of COVID-19, though there's no scientific evidence for it. There's no peer-reviewed literature behind it. The overwhelming evidence is in favor of zoonotic spillover, that bats and pangolins, you know, these viruses are passed along through interactions between different species and ultimately to us. And so that's been a real problem. And the other thing, you know, and Emma, I think you're referring to, you know, you're underscoring this. A lot of our mainstream media are now actually being bought out by plutocrats. Every day there's a new headline of a new what we used to think of as a mainstream media organization that is being bought out by a conservative plutocrat. What could possibly be the agenda? We know what the agenda is there. They don't care if they turn a profit.
We know this with Amazon. We know this now with CBS and perhaps Time Warner. And Viacom with Ellison coming in. Barry Weiss, who was the lead promoter of Jordan Peterson and Dave Rubin and the Weinstein
brothers. The Weinsteins, who are at the forefront of all of this, right? Where they have, I'm sorry to cut you off, Sam, but like this alternative media, like, I guess the way that they present themselves, but they are now in bed with like this plutocrat representative, Barry Weiss. And like that, it's this illusion of the democratization of information where it's actually even more insidious than it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely, Emma.
In terms of the P's, we covered also petrostates simultaneously following the plutocrat. What about the pros, as it were?
Yeah, and we'll combine the pros and the propagandists. These are the people who are down in the trenches disseminating misinformation and disinformation, often making money from doing so, whether it's fossil fuel industry-funded talking heads who are actually paid to promote their talking points in op-eds and on news programs, or as Peter has talked about quite a bit, these sort of public health influencers. There's a movement I'm forgetting the exact term that we use, but there's a health movement right now among conservatives that basically rejects the messaging and the wisdom of the public health community and turns to these alternative
MAHA people.
The MAHA, exactly. RFK Jr. is now the figurehead of that. He's the head of Health and Human Services. At the very top of our government, our policy now is run by, you know, individuals who are tied to this this sort of fake health industry, and they make money by selling these miracle cures, and people won't buy their miracle cures if they believe in the efficacy of the conventional cures, vaccines, and masks, and all the other measures that the public health community has been promoting. And so they need to discredit the public health community to sell their product. And that's become an important part of the MAHA movement. And when you still at those very press conferences, at that press conference where RFK Jr. was trying to blame vaccines and Tylenol for COVID-19, he was actually marketing
for autism.
For autism, blaming it for autism. He was actually he mentioned a product that is one of those miracle cure products that one of their friends is making a whole lot of money marketing.
I mean, you really only need to be on Instagram for like 10 minutes to get an example of what you're talking about. Like, and if they're not selling something at that moment, it takes about like 60 to 90 days, maybe some number of their followers, whatever it is they're talking about.
Yeah.
Dementia, or park, you know, like, or even like sleep apnea or whatever it is, there is always like the traditional medicine is not working in this way. Here are the, there's a study that shows that lysine is going to fix everything about you. And it just so happens that I sell lion's mane, which is also the key ingredient in this. And I don't know if lion's mane is going to hurt you.
Some of these will. Chloroquine. Some of these actually, ivermectin can do real damage.
I have no doubt that there's also, you know, supplements out there. You know, the magnesium helps you sleep, and that there are things that are good there. But it is very, very difficult to be a layperson and to assess this.
And to litigate the actual medical science here. And they take advantage of that. In an environment where there's massive misinformation, people don't know who to turn to. They turn to the charlatans. And I remember the term. It's the health freedom movement. And notice how freedom is there, right? Because it's trying to tap into sort of the ethos of today's conservative movement. They want to take away your freedom, whether it's, you know, the hamburgers and the flights to see grandma, you know, because of climate lockdowns. You know, they're not going to let you out of your home anymore. They're actually using the same messaging when it came to COVID-19 because it fed that same sort of conspiratorial, these people want to take away your freedom. And so you're right. There's a very specific interest, these charlatans, that are making huge amounts of money off of these fake cures. But then at the same time, it's feeding this libertarian agenda of, you know, that seeks to basically, you know, that seeks to eradicate trusted messengers, that seeks to eradicate trust in expertise. Because in that environment where misinformation and disinformation thrives, they win.
Well, it's anything, it seems to me, that is even remotely communitarian, right? Like, science is not straightforwardly democratic, but there is like a peer review process. Yeah. And there is a sense of like the scientific community puts out information, and the science, of course, is also necessarily going to be used by governments to do things, and almost none of those things they do is going to be favorable to incumbent corporate powers. May end up subsidizing solar or and eventually they'll become the incumbent, and maybe it's then, I don't know, water or whatever it's going to be 100, 200 years from now. But that is why I think it has been just a long-term agenda item for conservatives, broadly speaking, to undermine science, because that type of objective reality ends up taking things out of the realm of a supposed religious-informed morality. Yeah. And that's exactly. Basically the whole recipe.
Exactly. In the absence of fact-based discourse, again, their alternative facts and conspiracy theories get purchased. And that's what we're seeing today. I don't know, Emma and Sam, if either of you, I suspect you, neither of you are old enough. I grew up watching Carl Sagan, watching the Cosmos series. And you can still view it. And Sagan was sort of this great science philosopher and public figure of my generation. When I was growing up, that my generation grew up with. And he would talk about sort of the self-correcting machinery of science and how important it is to our way of life. And there's a very haunting passage in his last book. It was published in 1997, the year he passed away. The demon-haunted world, science as a candle in the dark. There's this passage, and you can go online and find it, where he has this premonition of a future, you know, at the time of his grandchildren. Basically, right now, if you extrapolate, he's talking about now, where people become so unable to understand the science and technology that runs, you know, rules their lives, that they become hostage to. He really emphasized pseudoscience and misinformation of that sort. He was very worried about horoscopes and crystal healing and that sort of pseudoscience. I don't think he quite envisioned how anti-science would be weaponized, that corporate actors would actually weaponize that to advance their agenda. And so it's even worse than what Sagan presaged.
I am of a similar age to you, and you can find, I think Sagan was on with Charlie Rose when he really articulated that fear. It is eerie.
Yeah.
But I also have to say, I mean, and this is sort of my little bailiwick, is the blind spot to the corporate interests that were then championed by conservatives was there then.
Yeah.
And it was a blind spot because there was this sense that, like, well, we all go to the same country club.
Yeah, we care about democracy.
and like the idea of like, well, you know, the theory, well, they have to live on this planet too, but the attitude I think that they have is like, well, that's why I have all the money to insulate me from the implications.
A naive assumption of good faith.
Yeah.
And that really was that was the weakness, as you say.
Let's talk about strategy and like what the response is. I mean, one of the conversations I am quite sure that we've had in the past was the disadvantage science. And I think it's the same thing with education. I came across the same sort of dynamic. When people want to attack education, when people want to attack science, it is people who are specifically propagandists, communicators who are coming into this space and going up against, let's say, in the context of educators, like education is very sort of student oriented. It's very hard to have a broad ideology about education because it is so specific to who you're teaching at any given point. And in the battle of ideas, that's a disadvantage. And science is the same way. You rely on nuance. You rely on the idea of like, what is true is what is most provable at this time. That evolves over time. And science is a process. And it is not a sort of like a static thing.
That's
a really hard argument to make if the guy you're arguing against is just saying like, I don't think so. How come you guys don't agree with what you did 5 years ago?
Yeah, we're trying to build something. They're trying to tear it down. And there's a fundamental asymmetry there. That is the asymmetry that we're seeing writ large in our politics today. Yeah. And they just have to confuse. We need to educate. And science is tough to start with, right? I mean, and it's often laden in jargon, and scientists have to work very hard to be able to explain things in terms that are accessible to non-experts. That doesn't come naturally. And it's hard. But it's a whole lot harder if you're communicating against this massive headwind of a disinformation machine that is trying to confuse the public, that is trying, and they win, right? If they can confuse the public. And so their strategy is to throw so much mud on the wall that there's just no way that you, as the person who's trying to clarify this things, can scrape it all off. And so there's an asymmetry in this battle to begin with. Now you add the fact that they have the leading plutocrats of the world, the world's wealthiest people funding their disinformation effort. And we've got a sort of a ragtag team of, communicators and scientists who are in it because they're trying to do the right thing, not making a whole lot of money doing so. There are so many layers of asymmetry here. That's in the book, in the closing message is sort of, I wax Tolkien-esque. We wax Tolkien-esque because this is an epic battle for the future of humanity. And there's no guarantee that we win this battle, right? And as I say, no white wizard will come to our defense here to save the day. But we do have truth on our side, and the stakes couldn't be greater. So we have to fight this battle.
What are some of the, what is your message to scientists? And then let's talk about lay people in terms of dealing with this.
Yeah, I mean, our message to scientists is that we have to be out there being willing to speak truth to power, to speak up. The other side is doing everything they can to silence us, to intimidate us. That's why they come after Peter. That's why they come after me. And we detail some of, our numerous adventures in the crosshairs of the disinformation machine in the book. But that hasn't deterred us because we know that the stakes are so great. They're literally the future of human civilization as we know it. And so we ask scientists to be brave, to be willing to speak truth to power, to be willing to work together with organizations because alone we're very vulnerable. As individuals, we're vulnerable, but there's strength in numbers. And as we work together, as we team together and we work with scientific organizations and the scientific societies to try to push back against the misinformation, to push back against the disinformation. We can make some progress there. But here's the thing, and this is the larger message. You know, there are lots of specific things we can do. We can try to, you know, create more opportunities for young scientists who have a proclivity and interest in science communication to get engaged in that. We can try to work closely with opinion leaders, journalists, and others to form sort of an ecosystem for getting, you know, actual scientific information out to the public and policymakers. But again, this is an asymmetric battle. There are overwhelming forces mounted against us. And in the end, if we don't change our politics, there isn't any obvious way forward. The most important thing that we can do is to participate in the political process, because if we don't win back, you know, our federal government for the side of science and fact-based discourse, our democracy is so fragile at this point. We are at such a vulnerable point right now that I fear that if we don't see people rise up, turn out in massive numbers in the midterm elections, where there's still maybe some time to steer this ship, if that doesn't happen, it's hard to see a way forward for the United States. And we see other Western nations also becoming vulnerable to some of these same, you know, sort of authoritarian tailwinds, we're seeing a movement towards authoritarianism in many other Western nations. And so, you know, we are at a crossroads right now. And it's important that we recognize that. We recognize that we are in the midst of a, you know, what is truly a battle, an existential battle for the future of humanity as we know it. And it's happening right now, as Sagan and others predicted.
Well, there's also the fact that this, we're talking, I think, about our democracy, and you are correctly talking about these threats to the United States, but we don't exist in the vacuum, obviously. I mean, we started the conversation with you speaking about some of these other incentives of who, you know, invested in Twitter and that kind of thing. I mean, where does China play into all of this? Because China seems to be outpacing the United States technologically quite rapidly, and it's just maddening to see, because you have disinformation like weighing down progress in this country like ankle weights, and it's just talk a little bit about China and that competition and the role that that plays.
Yeah, thanks so much for that question, Emma. You know, there's a line that, again, we borrow from Lord of the Rings. You know, our list of allies grows thin. Those of us fighting back against these forces, our list of allies grows thin. And so we look for who are the allies here. And sometimes they may come from sort of unexpected places, right? China is an ally when it comes to the battle for a livable planet. They are now leading the world. In the absent, with the United States now having become a petro state itself, our policies right now are dictated by the fossil fuel industry. That really leaves only China as sort of a superpower that is actually prioritizing environmental health and the climate crisis. And they're doing that in a number of ways. They're actually taking actions. President Xi actually, in his response to Trump's climate denial speech at the UN General Assembly, Xi responded to that, not by name, but basically saying, you know, we don't care if the United States is falling into sort of denial and opposition to, you know, to action, adopting an agenda of inaction. We will still lead, and we will lead by reducing our own emissions. Keep in mind, China doesn't have a legacy of two centuries of fossil fuel burning. And so arguably, they can rightly say we should get our turn too. So for them to reduce their carbon emissions is far more aggressive an action on their part than for the United States, which has two centuries of doing this. And they are reducing their carbon emissions. They're taking leadership there, and they're providing clean energy infrastructure, renewable energy, solar panels, sort of electric vehicles to the rest of the world. They're reducing global carbon emissions by doing
that. Also, I mean, they have the capacity to have a 10, 20, 30-year vision. And in 30 years, I mean, 30 or 40 years, regardless of what scenarios play out, the world is going to be significantly more solar powered and significantly more electric vehicle powered than it is today. And the question is, who's going to capture all of that that manufacturing behind that and that technology? And China is like somehow has leapt ahead of us. They seem like they're now like 10 years, 15 years ahead of us that.
Yeah,
they have EVs that go 400 miles and cost 20 grand. I mean, and I only bring that up in the sense that like one, it almost like speaks to the lie of even the nationalism that that is being promoted by these same science deniers. Yeah. Because if you were genuinely interested in the American project, you would look to what China's doing in terms of EVs instead of cutting subsidies
100%
to this in 3 months.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, you know, I'll just say
I want to ask you, though, is there a move in academics? Like obviously, like I couldn't agree more in terms of the political situation and the urgency and immediacy of that.
Yeah.
I wonder if in the context of the scientific community, particularly on the university level, is there an awareness that, like, you know, this happened in the 80s, I guess in the 80s and the 90s, like business schools said, like, we're going to have an ethics class. And because they were realizing what was going on, it didn't seem to work that well. But is there a move within the context of the scientific community to say part of our job now, to the extent, because I maybe this is my own sort of like bias, but scientists aren't necessarily, you know, the most sort of like necessarily the most communicative, and you know, that's not where their skill set.
I'm trying not to be insulted, Sam, but I agree with you.
Present company accepted.
We're not trained that. We're not trained to do that. And
you're not self-selecting for those attributes. Exactly. I mean, if I actually had to work, you know, as opposed to just talk for a job, then I would be, you know, I would have gone and done it. But
absolutely.
But is there any effort to, I don't know, either create a new discipline within the context of like science departments, or, you know, you're on the science communication tract, or just broadly speaking, some, you know, training for how you, I don't know, apply for grants, you know, in the face of a system that is
stacked against.
I mean, like, there's capitalism in scientific grants as well. I mean, so I mean, what's the answer on that?
Yeah, thanks for asking. And I'll say I was for 9 months I'd taken up a new position at Penn. I was a university administrator. I was the vice provost for climate science policy and action. And I stepped down a couple weeks ago, because I felt in this moment I couldn't be a university administrator. We have a policy. The university has a policy of neutrality on controversial topics. I had to be out there speaking truth to power at this moment. And so I stepped down from that position, from that administrative position. I still direct a center here at Penn. I'm still a professor here at Penn, but I'm not a university administrator. And I feel that frees me up to talk about these things, because we have to be able to be out there talking about this. And as you say, you know, do we need a new sort of, you know, area of sort of academic inquiry, science communication? I think so. I think communication is a field, and I think increasingly there's a lot of support and interest in sort of science communication as an academic discipline. And our center here at Penn, which is partly it's in the School of Arts and Sciences, and it's also partly in the Annenberg School for Communication. And our center actually works towards you know, the science of science communication. How can we be more effective? How can we provide more opportunities? And again, we need to provide, not tell every scientist that they should be out there, you know, speaking to the public, because you put your finger on it. A lot of them shouldn't be out there speaking to the public. Their talents lie best in them being in the laboratory doing the science that they do. But for those scientists, and there are, who have a proclivity for communicating, who have an interest and a passion for doing so, we've got to provide the opportunities. We've got to provide the training. And that's what our center does here at Penn. That there are a lot of other sort of similar centers and institutes around the country that recognize that we need at least some set of the scientific community to be properly trained and equipped to be out there, you know, speaking to the public and policymakers, because as I've often said, if we're not out there, we leave a vacuum, and we know whom that vacuum is going to be filled with. It's going to be filled with the disinformation specialists, the bad actors. And that's where we are right now. We're late in the game, right? So we can't wait to train a whole new generation of scientists to do battle against disinformation and misinformation. It'll be too late. So we got to go to battle with, if you will, to quote a public figure from some decades ago,
Rumsfeld,
with the army that we have. That's where we are right now.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder too if ultimately, as this, you know, hopefully we have the opportunity for this type of movement to mature, you know, which I do think is, like, you know, we're in a very, very tentative period of time. But ultimately, I mean, if we look at who the, for lack of a better term, enemies of science are, they have been the huge money interests who are making money off of stuff that is harming the planet. It is, you know, whose interests are against the idea of government regulation, broadly speaking, right? Broadly speaking, because government regulation, broadly speaking, inhibits corporate power. That's largely what it does. Right. And also this, you know, the idea that, like, sort of the wellness industry is so huge right now, and it is driven by a series of, like, many, many, many hundreds, if not thousands, maybe millions of sort of wellness entrepreneurs, right, who all sort of plug into this. It's, yeah, also a function, it seems to me, of both a lack of regulation and a sort of a level of desperation that comes with a government that has not addressed sort of the economic well-being of people. Like, if you know, if your choice out there is to believe that, like, this substance is going to, you know, cure people's cancer, and you could stop your medications, and it's a combination of salt water and also just the commodity that I sell,
exactly,
then, yeah, you're going to do it.
They're very cheap, and so they can make a lot of money. And it goes along with consultations, which they charge huge amounts for. And so you're right. There's an immense amount of money that's being made here. And it is a product of the deregulatory sort of environment that was created by conservatives and libertarian activists decades ago. They were working. This health freedom movement was spurred onward by libertarian activists, because they want to get rid of regulation, whether it's for public health, whether it's for fossil fuels or anything else. And that's why we're, you know, in the tight spot that we're in right now. So in the book, we talk about, you know, it's obviously important to restore common sense regulations. We need to be regulating social media companies that have allowed misinformation and disinformation.
How would you do that?
So there are models for that. Other countries like Australia, for example, are doing that. They do have, like, Canada. They do actually have laws that sort of rein in. We used to have the Fairness Doctrine, right?
Yep.
Which mandated that media outlets present information in a balanced and accurate way. One of the first things that Ronald Reagan did was to get rid of it. His FCC got rid of that. And so there was once an infrastructure for doing that. It's been dismantled. We have to rebuild it. And again, it comes down to, how do we do any of that? We can't do any of that if we don't restore some semblance of sanity to our federal government, if we don't elect representatives at all levels, all the way up to president, that will represent our interests rather than be rubber stamps for the bad actors that currently run the show. And that's where we are right now. In a year, we're going to have a midterm election, which will determine whether we are able to right this ship. And people should be doing everything they possibly can to motivate everybody they know to participate in that election, because it really is an election that will determine the future of our democracy and possibly the future of human civilization.
I couldn't agree more. And one final question. Are there social movements out there, like electoral politics, obviously, like it's an urgent period of time. There's no guarantee there's going to be an election in 2026. This is not something I would have said maybe 4 months ago, but the pace in which these things are going, it almost seems harder to imagine that Trump won't say, like, well, we need 30 days before we have this election, whatever it is.
I have that same fear.
Redistricting, Sam, whatnot.
Yep.
The only other backstop we have, and these are not mutually exclusive things. In fact, I would argue that they are absolutely necessary for each other, are social movements structures that exist where people organize around at the moment.
And they're trying to push back against that as well, as you know. That's all of this Antifa. They want to intimidate anybody who would think to speak out, anybody who would organize and protest. That's what they're doing right now.
Yep. Do you see unions as, other organizations that are structured around fighting corporate power, which is largely, you know, what we're talking about here? As being important to this fight?
Yeah, I mean, there's a civic infrastructure in this country. You can be involved, various groups, non-governmental organizations that are working towards change and recognizing, and this is an important, it's easy to become very depressed here, given what's happening in the United States. But as I remind people, all the United States gets to determine here is what it is going to do moving forward. China, the European countries, Australia, the rest of the world is moving forward, with science-based policies. And they're the ones who are going to prosper. China, Europe, they are going to prosper as they pursue sort of science and technology and where it's leading us. If we turn our back on science and technology, which was ultimately this country was built on it, if we turn our back on that, as you alluded to earlier in the conversation, we're going to fall behind the rest of the world. And so I'm pretty confident that the world will move forward, that we will get off fossil fuels, we'll move towards renewable energy. We're already doing that. We're already seeing that happen. All the United States gets to determine at this point is, will it be part of the solution or will it be part of the problem? And if it's the latter, then the other countries of the world are going to have a really tough conversation about what to be done about the bad actor, the bad state actors, Russia, Saudi Arabia. And do we want to be in that group?
Dr. Michael Mann, climatologist, a geophysicist, director of the Center for Science Sustainability in the Media at the University of Pennsylvania. The book is Science Under Siege, How to Fight the Five Most Powerful Forces That Threaten Our World, written with Dr. Peter Hotez. Please give him our thanks for the work that he's been doing as well. Really appreciate you coming on today. We'll put a link to that book at majority.fm and the podcast and YouTube description.
Thank you. It was a pleasure talking with both of you. Hope to come back again soon. So thanks so much.
Thanks.
Likewise.
All right, folks. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to head into the fun half, or as we call it around here, the done half. No, I don't think so. Just trying to keep people's spirits up. It's Monday. Got a full week of this ahead, and then we'll just start all over again.
The heat is on them when they do this.
Yes.
Yes, we'll have a fun clip. You know, that's the thing about Chuck Schumer, always trying to keep things like fun up there.
Well, the levity.
Oh, wait till you see the jokes.
Oh,
he's
man.
Making.
It is so funny.
It is. All right, folks, just a reminder, it's your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you not only get the free show free of commercials, but you get the fun half. And perhaps most importantly, you help this show survive and thrive in an era which is, you know, not so great. It's not the best era of...
A little bit of disturbance.
May you live in interesting much. Times. Yeah, I'll pass. I'll pass on that. But what are you going to do? Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Matt, what's happening on Left Reckoning?
Yeah, Devin Thomas O'Shea came back on for our Sunday show, patrons, patreon.com/Left Reckoning. We talked about one battle after another, which I saw and thought was awesome and probably going to see again.
Is that
Paul Thomas Anderson? Yeah.
You guys are into that.
I was front row, center seat, and it was glorious. It was great.
Whoa. You got to go see it in 70 millimeter.
That's what I saw.
You saw it in the, I won't say what theater. Okay. Yeah. Yes. I'm going to go see it again in 70
Stephen Miller might burn the theater down.
What up? Like all of a sudden, it's like a bunch of cinephiles around
oh,
here.
Oh, come on.
We got to get Matthew Film Guy on. He will shit all over that movie. I am sure of it.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. Paul Thomas Anderson always like has a little bit more artifice than I think Film Guy Matthew likes.
What kind of bull what? Is this?
Huh? All right, DeFra, I don't want to get into it. I don't even know if that's Matthew Film Guy's opinion, so I'm not going to go
take
after
it up with
it.
Him.
First of all,
don't you get into an argument with him about Superman too? All right, folks,
no, this is better than Superman. Superman. Who gives a shit about Superman?
Well,
now?
You talked about it for quite a long time.
Well, this is
all right.
This
we
got to
take a quick
movie.
Break. We'll head into the fun half
first.
Is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
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 You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Grandpa.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabber.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good. Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
This guy might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird.
No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. I want to just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me...
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.
We are back. Sam Seder, Emma Viglin, the fun half. The fun half of the Majority Report show, where things are fun. You will have fun, or we will pepper spray you in your face.
At this footage of stormtroopers.
Yeah. Hey, folks. Today on what are your local fascists up to? We have feds out in Portland, Oregon on Friday night, and they're having a conversation with a couple of young people who are protesting and have obviously hurt the fifis of these big, strong federal ICE officials. And, well, you know what happens next. Let's watch this. Oh, wait. Go back. Is that the beginning that we have?
It starts up.
No, start it earlier, because I want...
They cut the climax to the beginning, but we can play it from...
Yeah, play it. I want to see the buildup. I just want to show you what, like, scroll through that a little bit. I want to show you just exactly what the supposed threat was. Yeah, let's take it right here. Why these thugs did what they did. Because you will see that this couple is standing there saying things. We can't exactly hear what they're saying. But they could have been mean things. They could have been like, hey, your outfit looks ridiculous. Or you're a jerk. Or you shouldn't be here terrorizing my neighbors.
Or like, something, how do you have such a big gut and no ass?
Right. It could have been
something like,
that.
The ass went to the gut. Yeah. You know when you like have a dent in a car and it just goes out the other way?
Yeah. I mean, there could have been all sorts of really horrifically mean things that they were saying that provoked this attack by these federal thugs.
Body check in because what? Who is talking to you? No. Hey, this is the line that they
created. Look at that.
Oh, shit.
Oh, my God.
What do you mean?
They're completely blind now, those two victims of that attack. And you can see, if you go back, you can see it was completely premeditated. It wasn't just the sprayer, because you see, this other cop goes and grabs the cop to the left, puts his hand on his back and walks him back so that he is out of the way. So that guy with the spray went up with the intention of spraying. You see that?
Yep.
That guy with the spray went up there with the intention of spraying regardless. And it was because I heard what that woman was saying. She was saying, you're effing stupid. And so, therefore, you deserve a point-blank shot in the face with pepper spray.
I mean, you say woman. I don't know who that is. She looks like she could be a girl. She looks like she could be a teenager.
She could be a teenager.
I mean, I'm not even saying that. My point is just, like, that's a very young person.
Protest
just
not allowed.
In the face.
Saying, swearing in front of a federal official, apparently... the judge and jury decides you get pepper sprayed right in the face, point blank. Here is another instance across the country of federal thugs. In this case, they are masked, and in plain clothes. We don't know the circumstance of why they decided to apprehend this man in the middle of a street between 63rd and Costner Avenue in Chicago. This is, this clip comes via
Pablo Manriquez of migrantinsider.com.
We will put a link to migrantinsider.com. And this, they have tackled this guy. This went on for minutes and minutes. And eventually more and more people start coming. One of the guys, one of the citizens, patriots around there, actually, I think like gets probably crosses the line in terms of like actually getting physically involved in what's going on. But in these moments, people are taking advantage of this opportunity where the power dynamic has shifted from these rogue federal police force and the citizens of Chicago.
You've suspended due process.
Making it very difficult. People are stopping their cars in the street, and they eventually give up.
Hell yeah.
Now, that was after like 3 or 4 minutes of in the entire video.
Yeah, you can go and check into it.
You can go and check and watch the whole video. That guy takes off, and then there's another ICE car that goes by later. But they were all over the place. But it just goes to show you, I mean, there are circumstances where it becomes too difficult for these guys to, I don't want to say do their job. They seem to be freelancing all the time. It's unclear what their job is. Certainly not to keep communities safe. It is to endanger people. And they don't seem to operate within any type of judicial or legal framework. There is no judicial or legal framework that allows a cop, based upon someone swearing at them, presenting zero threat, to go up and spray pepper spray in their face.
It'd be nice for that $30 billion budget to just turn into a lawsuit slush fund.
Well, we do at the very least have some suits. Like, this is the big story coming into today, is that you have the Oregon lawsuit from or the Oregon judge, who is a Trump appointee, federal judge, blocked the Trump administration from sending federal troops to Oregon. This judge was also, like, is such a Republican, so in those circles, that she was on the Ken Starr legal team with the Bill Clinton.
For Whitewater.
For Whitewater. And she personally interviewed Monica Lewinsky.
Do you have a name?
I don't have it written down here, but it's in every article on it. It's a female judge. She is as conservative as it gets. And she basically
Karen Immergut. And what happened was she first issued a temporary restraining order, essentially. I don't know if it was actually a TRO or just enjoined the Trump administration from nationalizing the Oregon National Guard and having them go into Portland. Then the Trump regime tried to nationalize the California National Guard and send them to Oregon. And she stopped that one. And then Trump regime tried to nationalize the Texas National Guard. And at that point, she basically was like, aren't defendants simply circumventing my order? Why is this appropriate? And so she imposed a fully enjoined the federal government from nationalizing any guard and going in there. And now there's rumors that Trump wants to send in the military. We have this little thing called posse comitatus in this country where you're not allowed to use the military in that fashion. But you'll recall they did send 200 Marines down in into L.A. as sort of like a way of testing and sort of
dip our toes.
And we just wanted to sort of like, it's like memory foam. We just want to create a little bit of an indent. Now, those Marines never left their barracks and because it was just a little toe dip. The Trump administration has appealed to a the circuit court there. We'll see where that goes.
And now there's that separate also suit from Illinois suing the federal government in response. So, you know, the part of why the Democratic messaging has been so horrific and listless and basically non-existent, at least from congressional leadership, has been their strategy to rely on the courts. And in the first Trump administration, that was fairly effective, or that was a decent blueprint for it. And the Trump administration this time around has basically said we don't care, or has tried to overwhelm the courts or get around them. This is a glimmer of hope in that it's coming.
Let's play clip 21. This is the Oregon attorney general explaining the that federal judge's order. Again, this federal judge appointed by Trump was working on Whitewater. You can't get much more right-wing Republican than this federal judge, at least on paper.
Good evening, everyone. Dan Rayfield, Oregon's Attorney General. It's past 8:30 on a Sunday night, and I know the last thing that you want to do is listen to the Oregon Attorney General, but we have an incredibly important update in our case, the National Guard case, to pause the president's attempt to bring the United States military onto the streets of our cities. Yesterday, we were successful in receiving an order from the court pausing the president's attempt to federalize the Oregon National Guard. Shortly after that, hours after that, the president made orders to bring the National Guard of California to Portland. Today, we filed another temporary restraining order seeking an order to pause that action. Once we filed that action, the president let us know that he was bringing the Texas National Guard to the state of Oregon. This evening, we had an emergency hearing with Judge Emmergood, and she again granted our temporary restraining orders, this time a broader temporary restraining order, pausing all attempts to bring any National Guard from any state to the city of Portland. We do expect the federal government to attempt to appeal this ruling, and we will continue to keep you updated as this progresses. Again, you have amazing people at the Department of Justice that will work all hours of the week, the weekend, to protect Oregon's values. We'll keep you updated.
Okay, and Stephen Miller had this to tweet out. In response to that, he wrote, ICE facilities are federal property conducting a federal mission of immigration enforcement that protects the lives and livelihoods of 300 million American citizens. Well, that's all bullshit. The president has undisputed authority under both statute and constitution to deploy troops stationed in any state to defend a federal facility from domestic terrorism or violent assault. That is based on the assumption that that assault has actually happened.
Right, which the judge completely disagreed with in her opinion. That was the she undercut their very
It's
like,
made
pretext.
Up, in other words.
Yes, Nazi hysterics.
Right.
A district court judge has no conceivable authority whatsoever to restrict the president and commander-in-chief from dispatching members of the U.S. military to defend federal lives and property. Today's judicial ruling is one of the most egregious and thunderous violations of constitutional order we've ever seen, and is yet the latest example of unceasing efforts to nullify the 2024 election by fiat. Remember, all this is about preventing the removal of illegal alien trespassers from the United States at any cost. It's absurd. It's a lie. It's a lie on its face. And this is not the first time that Stephen Miller has issued like a vague threat about the judiciary. He did one just the other day about a South Carolina judge, a Judge Diane Goodstein. And this is what Stephen Miller, the issue before us now, this is on October 1st, is simple and clear. There is a large and growing movement of left-wing terrorism in this country. It is organized and funded, shielded by far-left judges, prosecutors, and attorney generals. The only remedy is to use legitimate state power to dismantle terrorism and terror networks. That you may have referred to it as the only remedy. The judge that he was responding to at that time, this is a shot of her house the next day. Pop it up. That is her house on fire. Apparently her husband had to be sent to the hospital.
Got bombed, right?
We don't know.
You didn't hear this thing burned.
They're saying it could be an explosion. We still have to verify it, but we are hearing less about this because, like, also the attack on that church that was the suspect was a Trump supporter. If this cannot be used and exploited for the purposes of furthering Trump's fascist project, they do not elevate it and seemingly do not care about it. And
I would include in that the kid, the Charlie Kirk fan who ran over those two girls.
Right.
Killed them dead. We will touch on that later. Meanwhile, in Chicago, Brandon Johnson has just signed an order on Monday morning prohibiting U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement and other federal agencies from using city property for civil immigration enforcement. They can still do criminal, but civil immigration enforcement, which means that if you don't have a criminal record, regardless of your immigration status, the city is no longer going to provide you any assistance whatsoever. The order prohibits federal authorities from using city-owned or controlled parking lots, vacant lots, and garages as staging areas, processing locations, or operation bases for civil immigration enforcement activity.
This is interesting because this had been talked about a little bit in the context of New York, where there were some activists saying that that New York City should shut off the power to, what's it, 32 or 26 Federal Plaza, I'm forgetting, 26, where they were doing all of these kind of ICE kidnappings. And this is a version of that where, okay, perhaps the city of Chicago doesn't have jurisdiction over the building, but it does with the parking lots and parking garages on the outside.
The order applies to all city-owned and city-controlled parking lots, garages, vacant lots, including Chicago Public Schools property. Additionally, the order supports private property owners, tenants, and institutions to deny to ICE and other federal agents working on immigration enforcement unless they can produce a warrant. The city will design and distribute official signage that will be given out for free to any private landowner or tenant can post on their property. The signage will clearly state no law enforcement official may enter for civil immigration enforcement or use the property as a staging area, processing location, or operations based. This is good stuff for other mayors to borrow. Here is the day before this is issued. Kristi Noem is out with Benny
Johnson.
Johnson. No word if Benny brought his family along on this trip. Sometimes he likes to go alone because, you know, listen.
Got to blow off some steam.
You got to blow off some steam occasionally. Out on your own.
And especially, and not in like the metro area that your family is in, because you might, you know some people in that area.
No, I'm just saying. That's my own personal experience. I like to go out and blow off some steam.
Fire up the apps.
Fire up the apps. You know how it is. Anyways.
And speaking of it, well, hanging out with somebody who is known to be an adulterer. I mean, I'm not trying to. I'm just using New York Magazine reporting on Kristi Noem, her husband lives in South Dakota still. She's been shacking up with Corey Lewandowski, the unofficial number two for her at DHS.
I really think it is a category error to claim that Kristi Noem and Benny Goodman or Benny, what's his
Johnson.
Name? Benny Johnson would be involved.
No, that's I would never total, make that. I would never make
that's
that.
That's a total
claim.
Category.
I
error.
Would never make that. Claim.
Anyways, no, that's not no the one point. Would make that claim. But this Chicagoan patriot, great American. Is at the one of the Chicago police departments, and look, we're familiar with this. Sometimes you got to go in and buy a cup of coffee if you're going to use the bathroom. Sometimes you actually have to protect the community if you're going to use Chicago police departments.
Can we use the restroom?
No, you cannot.
You can?
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Interesting. That's what Governor Pritzker says is cooperation in keeping people safe.
If we can't urinate in there, we can't keep people safe.
So why wouldn't they let you in? What's been going on here? What's been going on here, Secretary?
We were coming to go out and do some operations to pick up some guys with criminal convictions on them, and the city police wouldn't even let us use a restroom.
Oh, my God.
And you were just...
It's funny they say criminal convictions as if they can't just say they have to lean on this is the scary bad guys and everyone knows. It's
of
just
course, it's false.
Violations.
It's false. Well over 50% now of their arrests are people without criminal convictions. And they all have weak bladders.
Yeah.
All of these ICE people are famous for having weak bladders. Significant portion of the ICE personnel... I mean, this is like a perfect example. They soil themselves
it's terrorism
on a daily
to make
basis.
Me pee my pants in the parking lot.
Yeah. A second UTI has hit the building.
That's right. Yeah.
Bought by a worker here from the city?
A worker at the municipal building here in Broadmoor.
Maybe I'll pause it. I'm sorry. That it sounds like it's not a police department. It sounds like it's a regular, it's a municipal.
It's a muni building in Broadview, Illinois.
Oh. Now,
as I wrote on the sound sheet.
Oh, sorry about that. What are the available medals in Chicago that you can give a city employee? Yeah. Because this one should be getting one.
A Municipal Medal of Honor?
Yep.
Yeah. Also, the fact that he's just the government shut down. Sorry, but it's no, you cannot.
Right.
The screaming. I love it.
But she does say that they would not allow, or maybe this is just, she also wouldn't be, it wasn't allowed at the police station because she mentions that here.
Would not allow us to go in and to use a restroom at the police station. So as much as these local leaders and governors talk about cooperating and having the backs of our law enforcement officers, this is what we have to put up with every single day. And all we're doing is getting criminals as terrorists and cartels and gang members off.
I like the idea that even the cops don't want help with that.
Right.
Now you can see a lot of the ICE, a lot of the ICE guys are walking around sort of squinting,
pinching their kneecaps together.
And here, I think Kristi Noem is holding a bottle with her own urine.
That's a great, great assumption to make.
I think it's clearly what's going on here. Go ahead.
To make families safer. It's ridiculous.
I mean, is impeding law enforcement? I mean, this is a real problem.
This is a real problem. I'm so proud of our officers that deal with this.
Did
every
he say
day.
Impeding or impeding?
Impeding. You're impeding.
You're impeding. Impeding.
Kristi,
you're impeding law enforcement.
We can't.
This is a real problem. We can't pee in there.
You know what? This is a good opportunity to say we need more public restrooms. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. This is an opportunity for empathy for all of those unhoused people that they want to lock up and federally warehouse. Yeah, it's sometimes tough when you can't have immediate access to a bathroom.
Maybe we can do a GoFundMe where we do get adult diapers for all of the ICE.
Dipes for ICE?
Yeah,
They got to wear them on the outside of their clothes, though.
Yes.
For fun.
Yeah, the guys who have to detain everyone who isn't like a 50-year-old grandma or something like that. Yeah.
I know that America's got their backs, but what they face here every day is real prosecution.
Incredible.
Real prosecution. Wow. Can't prosecutor. Find a bathroom.
Wow.
The Secretary of Homeland
Security inside the building.
Wow.
Maybe if she bribed them with one of those, like, that $50,000 Rolex that she parades around as she breaks up families, they would have been more amenable to it. Like, the amount, the entitlement is incredible to me. The entitlement is incredible. Have you never been to, like, a gas station? They say restrooms closed. She's like, I'd be like, terrorist.
You're prosecuting
terrorist.
Us. You're prosecuting us.
I have to wear black pants so nobody sees
also,
the pee.
Also, the word she's looking for is persecuting yes. us. She wants to feel like she's persecuted because they can't take a wee-wee where they want to.
Well, she didn't know what habeas corpus was, right? Wasn't that her?
Oh, that's true. Yes.
She was. And wasn't that in, like, a congressional hearing? She couldn't figure that out. She's not the most prepared. Doesn't have a bathroom plan. Doesn't know when to drink water.
South Dakota's not sending their best, I think.
Well, yes, it seems that way.
Here is a clip. What number is this? Sorry. In Portland.
Clearly, this is Portland.
This is Portland.
Love this. Love this
guy in a frog suit. Now, later, there's clips of this guy in the frog suit. One of them came with pepper spray and poured it into the ventilation thing, which could really, really, I mean, kill somebody. You're in a plastic bag. But you can understand why they did this, because when you put on the frog suit, you gain special powers that forces that you actually, it changes physics in such a way that you can literally repel people with your fingers.
So menacing.
This is brilliant tactics.
Classic mascot move right there.
I have the pepper spray thing.
incidentally, the president of the United States and the current regime has gone to court to say that frog and then the woman dressed as a witch are why they need to send the U.S. military there. Here is these thugs. They're so mad. Now, look, what physical violence could the frog suit guy do? I mean, just contemplate this for a moment. What possible threat could this frog guy, I mean, I've been in costumes like this. It's very difficult to move. You're not presenting a threat. But yet, this is what, look at how mad they
are.
Well,
they're
about
scared
this.
They can't see his face, maybe.
They go and
it's
spray into his thing. Go ahead.
If you hide your face, you have, that people don't know who you are. Yeah.
It's filled with migrant babies. That's it.
So, yeah, you see a guy just, he finds this orange ventilation thing, tries to spray him right in the...
Yep.
Oh, nice. I mean, what goes through
psycho.
Your mind?
They're just psychos.
You're like, should I, I'd be laughing, but I wouldn't be in this situation. Well, but,
I
mean,
that's the thing, is like, I actually think humor really hits these kind of guys hard.
Yes.
Making them a laughing stock, you get right to, blood red rage.
Especially coming from women, as we saw earlier.
Oh, yeah.
But you guys are totally dismissing the spell that the frog cast on
them. Well, that's the other thing. I think we are being a little bit dismissive of, like, it must be terrifying to be faced with a frog that is 6.5 feet tall and casting spells. I'd be nervous, too.
I'm seeing that frogs can sometimes represent unclean spirits. So
ew.
That's biblically, sometimes you got to take that into
consideration. Well, if you're Ice Guy monitoring this, know that we have all the power of the witches collectively aimed at your organization right now. So just be careful on the full moon.
This is from Linda Juarez, Instagram account. Excuse me, TikTok account. This is in Cleveland. A lawyer is with, I don't know if it's her client. I suspect it might be. And these ICE agents, they don't know who he is. They want to arrest him because he's clearly brown. And so they go up and trying to get him to talk. And this is a good example. You do not talk in these situations. Here is, this is clip number 9.
We don't have confirmation of who he is, so you can leave him alone. He's going to remain silent. You have no arrest warrant either, so let's go. Let's go. Let's see the arrest warrant, Ben. You don't have a right to let go of him.
Hold on.
Let go of him. Where's the arrest warrant? You don't have to talk to him. Yes, he's not going to talk to you. He's going to stay quiet. He's not going to say anything. You have no confirmation of anything. This is the third time pushing down the elevator to go down, and you're preventing us to go downstairs. You're preventing us again. You're blocking the elevator. Third time they were trying to go downstairs.
You can go.
He's coming with me. You have no idea who he is. Let's go. Let's go this way. Again, you're holding him without an arrest warrant. Let's see the arrest warrant, sirs.
Okay.
Let's see the arrest warrant. Let's go.
Okay.
Where's the arrest warrant, guys? And what's the reason for the arrest?
This is a lawyer, incidentally, narrating this.
Let me get his stuff. Let me get his stuff. Let me get his stuff. Just say, shake your head yes. Thank you very much. Where are we going?
There you go.
Just wearing that Chief Wahoo hat too, like the old Indians logo, as he's just harassing brown people in the hallways. It's just...
Yeah.
This is what's going on, folks, and it's important that as many people as you know about this, because it's not going to end there, as if it ending there would be insufficient for people to be outraged and start realizing what's going on. But make no mistake about it, it's not going to end there. Stephen Miller is out there. He's the same guy who orchestrated this. There are billions of dollars more that are coming down the pike, and those got to be spent. And they're going to find whoever they can. And nothing's going to stop them unless people stand up to it. That's just the way it's going to work. So people need to be aware of what's happening. I had some dinner with some folks I didn't really particularly know too well the other night. And they brought up the Chicago building, and it was like, they said, there's not much coverage of it. What exactly is going on? And it's like, you know, we follow all this stuff intensely. And I think, you know, it is getting broader and broader awareness. But people aren't, I think, fully aware. It is very easy to dismiss it as like, oh, well, they must have a reason. We just are in territory that we haven't seen before. I mean, we've seen like cops use excessive force and in the context of protests. And we've seen things like stop and frisk. But there has been a presumably like an apparatus, like a structure to these things in the past that allow them to be addressed. And we don't, I mean, that's the thing. We don't have that structure in this situation. And there is no limiting principle.
Yeah. I mean, think about those instances of police brutality and like what would be called for. There would be a call for some sort of federal investigation. The Department of Justice would look into it. And the Biden era, it was, you know, Merrick Garland, whatever. It's Pam Bondi now.
Yep.
And they're picking and choosing what they're going to pursue based on explicitly partisan political motivations in the most open way that we've ever seen.
All right, let's do a couple IMs here, figure out what we're going
to
do.
Well, I'd love just to the, do we have anything on the flotilla? Just because,
we've got an update.
Yep. Over the weekend, the reports trickled out about the, nearly 500 flotilla activists. There were journalists, there were just humanitarians, actors, folks who were kidnapped by Israel in international waters, as they anticipated, when they were trying to bring life-saving aid to Gaza. And we didn't hear much from these people. I mean, I was grateful to see that friend of the show Greg Stoker was out this morning. I believe that David Adler, we still don't know what his status is of Progressive International, somebody else who's been a guest on this show before. So if you're in California, I'd really highly recommend calling your senators or your representatives, because David is in California and he's an American. But there were reports over the weekend that, Greta Thunberg, who was one of the most high profile activists who was taken by Israel, she reported treatment of, you know, humiliation and abuse to the Swedish embassy. The other activists that were there have said things to the press that she has yet to publicly verify herself, but their accounts are very similar, that she was humiliated, paraded around, kept in squalid conditions, and forced to kiss the Israeli flag. She was finally freed this morning, and this is what she had to say to the press in response.
Let me be very clear. There is a genocide going on in front of our very eyes.
We got to put it up. Yeah.
Can you hear that, though?
I can hear it, but it's a little low.
Louder.
Yeah.
Let me be very clear. There is a genocide going on in front of our very eyes. A live-streamed genocide on all of our phones. No one has the privilege to say we are not aware of what is happening. No one in the future will be able to say we did not know. Under international law, states have a legal obligation to act to prevent and to stop a genocide from happening. That means ending complicity, applying real pressure, and ending arms transfers. We are not seeing that. We are not even seeing the bare minimum from our governments.
Yeah, a little low.
Let me be very
clear. It's all right.
We should say yesterday there was, I think, about there was literally millions of Italians protesting, is my understanding. We should also add, we're just getting a report on the IM that Colombia has expelled Israeli diplomats over the flotilla. We should also say, got a message, another American on board that same boat as Stoker, Logan Hollersmith, a San Francisco native. It is sort of fascinating Nancy Pelosi put out a press release today. I guess, good. Quote, Logan Hollersmith is an American citizen from San Francisco who served as captain of the Gaza-bound humanitarian aid vessel. Is reported to be among those now detained in an Israeli prison. I call on the Israeli government to immediately grant full consular access, provide transparent evidence of any charges, and guarantee that proper legal rights are extended. I'm glad she used the word Israel there. At first, I did not see it. The right of U.S. citizens to due process and fair treatment under international law must be protected. I stand with the family of Logan Hollersmith in demanding clarity, accountability, and the safe return of all detainees. The international community must redouble efforts to deliver aid in Gaza, protect human life, and pursue a just and lasting peace for security for both Israeli and Palestinians. There is a thing that's missing from there. And even though it is she has no influence with the current administration of the American government, a call for America to leverage its aid to Israel. I mean, if the idea is that you need to redouble efforts to deliver aid in Gaza, protect human life, and pursue a just and lasting peace, where does leveraging U.S. aid go? Is that doubling efforts? Is that a redouble? Or is that like a re-quadruple, and so you can't go that far? We have the mechanism. The mechanism, the Israelis have admitted as much, is aid to Israel. End it. Enough. End it immediately.
Yep.
And if Israel thinks that they can continue on what they're doing without American aid, then fine, we'll deal with it. We will then, from there, redouble our efforts. There is absolutely no excuse whatsoever for a dollar of American taxpayer money to go to Israel at this point. I'm sorry. There's not any excuse for a dollar to go there.
Yeah. Here's just a little bit more of Greta, because I thought this was a really good point, where she is continuously changing the conversation from her mistreatment to the Palestinians.
Hakeem Jeffries.
And I could talk for a very, very long time about our mistreatment and abuses in our imprisonment, trust me, but that is not the story. What happened here was that Israel, while continuing to worsen and escalate their genocide and mass destruction with genocidal intent, attempting to erase an entire population, an entire nation in front of our very eyes. And I could talk for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
Okay. The beauty of this as a communication tactic, I mean, aside from what she's saying, and many of you have heard these things, but the question is, how does the broader world hear these things? Not just the United States, this, you know, going to Europe. Do you get one more person? How do you get at least one more person to be aware of this? Those cameras, those microphones are there because they want to know the most salacious of details in terms of, like, how are you treated?
Yep.
And she understands this dynamic.
At 22.
And she uses it. She'll even tease it.
Yep.
I could talk for hours, and maybe I will. After the next statement or the next statement.
I know.
You got to be here every time.
Well, we talk about messaging, right? I mean, and this is an activist messaging versus a politician, but a lot of the stuff kind of falls into the same bucket. It's like, how do you always redirect the conversation to where you want it to be? We're critical of Democrats, the Democratic leadership that say, you know, Jeffries is, yeah, he'll redirect the conversation when it's like there's the salacious fight between him and Trump over the racist sombrero meme. He'll redirect it vaguely to, like, we're going to help protect your health care and stuff. But someone like Zoran Mamdani is always redirecting it to what proactively he wants to do. And that's much better politics because it shows what you stand for, not just what you are against.
It's also easier, to be fair,
Yes.
To Hakeem Jeffries is that Mamdani has an actual, like, stated agenda that they're running on. The Democrats may. It's secret because they have been told by their consultant class that the best thing to do is not get in the way of Donald Trump harming himself. Now, of course, that was the strategy they used in 2024. It did not work. And so, of course, to justify that advice in 2024, the consultants are like, we've got to do it again. It's just, you got to do it better.
Yep.
That's the way that works.
Bet your way out of your losses.
Exactly. Exactly. We are just one good, like, we're an ace away from walking away with this with no problems. And, frankly, a new car.
Yeah.
Speaking of douchebags.
Oh, my God.
Listen.
Glad you said plural. Because.
Oh, yeah. This is a whole table full of them.
I don't even want to think about the smell in this goddamn place.
The sulfur, I think, is the word you're looking for. Sulfur. Years ago, and I know we've talked about this, I interviewed Van Jones on his new movement that he was starting. He had addressed Netroots Nation. This was like, we had no video back at the time. So this was probably like, I want to say like 2010 or 2011 or 2012. And I interviewed him on his new thing because he had a really tough, he was very tough at Netroots Nation about like he was going to debate Glenn Beck or something. I can't remember what it was. And I remember interviewing him, and he had this movement that he wanted, and it was like, it sounded like a populist movement. And I'm like, and who are the villains in this narrative? And he's like, there are no villains. And I'm like, wait a second, what? And he was so adamant that there was nobody, like, this was like, it was almost like it was just natural.
Okay, because when you're describing this, this sounds exactly like your conversation with Ezra Klein a few months ago. I just want you to be like,
to be fair, Ezra Klein, yeah, that's just because he didn't want to say it was the environmental groups and do-gooders. But here, like, when I was talking, he was like, no, and I'm like, this is not real. This is not real. And Van Jones has gone on to make me feel like I should trust my instinct on people because he is just as reprehensible as he's always been. Remember, this is the guy, incidentally, who proclaimed that Donald Trump finally became president. I can't remember what it was, whether it was the bombing of Syria.
Yeah,
or
it was something like that.
Whatever it was. That's in the first time around. This guy's running a racket. Full-on racket.
But isn't part of that because we had to fold everything into critical race theory and somehow the Middle East became part of,
I see it differently. I love this conversation because I think people, those of us who went to college, give a lot more credit to college courses for how the world works than I do. This is not about critical race theory on college campuses. This is about Iran. Iran and Qatar have come up with a disinformation campaign that they are running through TikTok and Instagram that is massive. If you are a young person, you open up your phone and all you see is dead Gaza baby, dead Gaza baby, dead Gaza baby,
right.
Diddy, dead Gaza baby, dead Gaza baby. That's basically your whole feed. So that's not DEI. That is a geopolitical adversary that is deliberately trying to divide the West against itself.
That view is not
okay.
Wow.
First of all, so grotesque to work in the dead Gaza baby into your joke, but also the implication that like, is he saying they're not real? Is he saying these dead Gaza baby? I mean, there have been literally tens of thousands of children murdered by Israel in Gaza. Tens of thousands, minimum, that we know of, whose name we can actually say. And is the implication like that Iran, that this is, they're fictionalizing it, or just that the reason why it's showing up in your feeds is because Iran and Qatar have the ability to amplify these images. I mean, this is...
Well, it's defensive because now there is the young people that he's talking about are, even if these young Republicans think Israel or AIPAC is toxic too, if they're under 30 years old, they have some understanding of that. And they're the primary consumers of TikTok. TikTok is now in the process of being sold to a bunch of, you know, Zionist billionaires. So there, Van Jones goes out there. Can we put him back up on the screen? Like, wearing that Israeli hostage pin, like it's freaking, I mean, you know, like his life depends on it. Acting essentially as a spokesperson for the Israeli government to claim that it's not the Zionist propaganda that you see over and over again on social media telling you not to believe your lying eyes. That's the problem. Oh, it's Qatar and Iran that somehow have influence over this over TikTok that is causing you to believe this kind of thing. It's the exact opposite. So he presents an alternative narrative for folks out there to continue to allow for Israel to skirt responsibility for the genocide they're committing and to give, like, I don't know, some cover for people to still support it.
What's amazing is Iran and Qatar, they are so powerful when it comes to marketing and social media, and yet they never ever do it on behalf of themselves.
It is so odd.
They are so powerful that they have the ability. Incidentally, it's not just on your TikTok where your kids looking at Diddy. Pew Research Center. Percent who have an unfavorable view of Israel, 2022 to 2025. Republican, lean Republican, has gone from 27% to 37% in 3 years. Ages 18 to 49 have gone from 35% unfavorable view of Israel to 50%. 50 plus.
Yep.
Have gone. This is amongst, I should say 50 plus amongst Republican, lean Republican have gone from 19 to 23. But in terms of Democrats, 50 plus have gone from 43% unfavorable view of Israel to 66% in 2025. I mean, 80% of...
this is likely Democrat voters in the 2026 primary.
80% want to reduce support for Israel. 74% want an arms bug. To make this about the kids in the social media is, again, a total distraction. Aside from the absolute abject, like, normalization of the death of Palestinian babies.
Yep.
I mean...
And it's
just like, what would be going on? How many shows would be canceled right now if somebody went on there and there had been tens of thousands of Israeli babies that were killed? Or if even if it made a joke like, you know, you're in the showers and it's like Jewish baby, Jewish baby, Jewish baby. And then, like, you know, actually one real shower or something like that joke with all the whole crew laughing, like
Tom Friedman.
How long would it take for that show to be off the air?
I mean, Bill Maher should know.
Yeah, he should.
He was fired for a 9/11 joke.
He said, hard to call the guys who are going in and blowing themselves up on the plane cowards.
Cowards. And then he was fired for it.
Yeah.
But Thomas Friedman is laughing at that joke there. Tom Friedman is another person. Well, I mean, more than Bill Maher in that way. Friedman was essential in laundering the Iraq war to the liberal class, the same liberal class that Van Jones is trying to appeal to there in terms of trying to get them to hold on to support for Israel, although the base is gone at this point, as we say. But the moneyed interests are still there. The investment in weapons technology in Israel and surveillance is still there. And that's what's just so scary about this TikTok sale to Larry Ellison, who, like, I mean, major Zionist, but also a major part of our like the dystopian surveillance state that has been created. And so the fact that Van Jones is out there saying that it's the exact opposite of the reality that you're about to experience, you have to wonder who he's auditioning for. Like, we're seeing too, Barry Weiss and her pro-Israel propaganda. They're taking over a major with Ellison.
CBS News, yeah.
Yeah, with CBS News.
And kids. They're going to buy Time
with
Warner
kids.
Next.
Yep, yep.
That's Comedy Central. That's HBO. That's on and on. I mean, CNN. Van Jones positioning, you know, make sure that he's still on that new CNN. He apparently apologized. I don't even need to read the apology. No, it's bullshit.
Also, wouldn't one dead Gaza baby be radicalizing enough? Like, the cynical way that they speak about how, God forbid, college students and young kids decide that they want to make the world a better place because they don't want our tax dollars going towards a genocide. I just can't understand that level of sociopathy. But if there's a paycheck on the other end of it, I guess you can convince yourself of anything.
I wonder if Iran is paying influencers $7,000 a post.
Yep.
You think it's amazing that we haven't been able to find that out yet? I wonder how they're doing it. I wonder how they're doing that, paying for that. It's such bullshit. Every single... Listen, I have no doubt that Iran engages in disinformation campaigns. I know that Iran has attempted to break into, like, government officials' emails, and they're doing this. But let's not kid ourselves. Israel does it too, and I would bet.
Oh my God.
Better.
There's no comparison. There is no comparison.
It's Israel, just that it turns out that seeing children, men, women brutalized, killed, bombed, wrapped in gauze from head to toe, having lost their entire families, is a little more compelling than Michael Rapaport crying because whatever, his career isn't what it should be because he's Jewish or whatever it is. That's the problem. The problem is that people are actually seeing what's happening. Not that they're being propagandized. It is they are literally seeing what's happening, despite the fact that Israel has not allowed journalists into Gaza, along with food and aid.
I mean, that was paid propagandists telling jokes to paid audience to laugh. I mean, the machine that you're up against with that. I mean,
it's absurd.
Every single person in that room is on the payroll. I mean, Bill Maher's audience is paid to laugh.
Yes, it's like literally.
They literally are. I mean, it's called like standing room only or something. I used to do paid audience work when I was younger, and his show was one of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I don't doubt that. Yeah. The obvious anti-Semite.
That explains a lot, actually. It makes me feel a little bit better that I do live in a world where I shared the same sort of understanding of the English language and of
the amount
people
of
getting paid to laugh
at
in
these
the,
ideas, yeah. though. Just like you're filling studios up to pay people to laugh at dead Gaza babies.
Also, what is Gaza baby? They're babies. We're all like, I mean, using this as a way, it almost just like further categorizes it into something you don't necessarily need to be that worried about.
Dehumanizes.
I mean, notice a lot of these Zionist propagandists will not say Palestinian. They'll say Gazan or Gaza, but not Palestinian.
Let's do some fun thing.
Sure.
Oh, here's Graham Plattner. I almost want to wait and play this when Matt is here, because that Plattner thing really reminded me of Michael, and I wanted to
tomorrow,
get
yeah.
Matt's opinion. But this one I really enjoyed. Not this. No. The other one, actually. This one is, I don't know.
You picked on old Chuck enough?
Well, it's not that that joke wasn't stupid, and he's, I don't know, like, I think he's having a nervous breakdown. but as long as they stay strong and continue, like, fighting against the Republican push to end the government shutdown and getting nothing in return, I'm going to be at least somewhat gentle, you know, making a stupid, moronic, completely unfunny joke when you're in the middle of pitching your primary, and I would argue insufficient, but so far at least somewhat effective talking point seems, I don't know, like you don't know what the F you're doing. But nevertheless, but let's go to this, number 15. One of the things that Chuck Schumer continues to F up on, and Hakeem Jeffries, and apparently Ed Martin, the chair of the DNC, we're starting to get like DNC members. Ken Martin, sorry. We're starting to see DNC members now, like, going to the press saying that we're talking to Ken Martin, asking him to be more supportive of Zohran Mamdani. Mm. Like, that's like when Time Magazine back in the day would cover something. You knew it was like, oh, this was hot a year ago, and it's making it to Time Magazine. If people in the DNC are now going public with their complaints to Ken Martin that the DNC is not doing enough to support Zohran Mamdani, we are light years past where, like, it's stale. And you would think that the voice of reason in terms of, like, panicking, like, what's going to happen to New York if Zohran Mamdani wins the mayoralty? Like, what? I can't bear to think of it. Well, take a Xanax and listen to Curtis Sliwa,
the Republican
in and the former guardian angel, or still guardian angel.
He's always a guardian angel.
The vigilante organization in New York is going to explain to you, don't wet your pants. You're going to be fine.
Anybody who knows the history of New York City knows we've had socialists in elected office. We've had communists in city council. We had Mark Antonio, who was the congressman that represented East Harlem when FDR was the president. He was a socialist. Somehow life went on. We survived it. It's part of the political process. I don't fear socialists. I don't fear communists. I say leave it to the people. Let them make the decision at the ballot box.
I mean, Andrew Cuomo Anybody likes taking credit for LaGuardia Airport being nicely renovated now. The namesake LaGuardia is somebody that Sliwa could have pointed to there in terms of, like, transformational. I don't know if LaGuardia would have been identified as a socialist, but definitely like a New Deal kind of
Zohran definitely
progressive.
Identifies him as a socialist, yeah.
Yes.
Socialist all the time.
Yeah. So there you
but
go.
But what I found also really fascinating about what Sliwa did there, having been around a bunch of old Jews myself, both professionally and in terms of like, is Sliwa immediately goes into like an old Jewish man voice.
It's like a Catskills comment.
A total Catskill comment, but it's almost as if he's signaling to the, and we should say, holdouts, the majority of Jews, to the extent that we know the polling in this race, there's been multiple polls. The majority of Jews in this city support Mamdani. That's just a fact. To the extent that we can know, the polls that have been taken all show Mamdani with at least double-digit support from Jews. But go back to Sliwa for a second. This part where he's like, we survived. We're going to make it. I mean, this part, it's like he's basically saying, Cuomo, you're a piece of shit. And I'm not dropping out. I don't give a crap I got everything I need. I got my show. Put it in the middle there. I think it's like, because it's right here. Yeah, go ahead.
Who was the congressman that represented East Harlem when FDR was the president? He was a socialist. Somehow life went on. We survived it.
We survived it. I got news for you. He's doing a Yiddish accent there. And if you've listened to Curtis Sliwa, like I have on WABC, or I think I have actually even maybe done a debate with him back in the radio days, he always plays up his Italian accent. Now, but that is the first time I've ever heard him like, we survived. Somehow we went on.
I have no idea. What is his ethnicity?
Italian.
Oh, okay.
Oh, well, yeah. You never. He's
shot
constant.
By the Gotti family.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, he's a real New York character. I mean, he's also paying it back because Zoran has smartly said, like, I trust Sliwa more than Adams or Cuomo. Because he knows that, now that Adams has dropped out, it's less relevant. But both of those were more of threats to him than Sliwa. So.
I actually do trust Sliwa.
I 100% trust Sliwa. I mean, and also a guy like Sliwa, who's been a bit of a character in New York politics for a while, has dealt with Andrew Cuomo. Andrew Cuomo needed the threat of him being the front runner to get this over the finish line. And now that he's been so easily and handily defeated, a lot of his like most potent weaponry, which is his like retaliatory bully attitude, it's made moot. We read those quotes from that one of those donors who was like, yeah, I donated a rich guy $250,000 in the primary, but that's because I thought he was going to win. I wanted to curry favor with him. Now, who cares? So no one likes Andrew Cuomo, even like Republicans that have had to deal with him, let alone Democrats. And that's where his institutional support has completely collapsed.
I just want to, remind you that Jewish voters support Mamdani. It's just the case.
Yep. You'll hear that Jewish voters use interchangeably with Zionist activist groups in most of the press, or Jewish students in play with Zionist activist groups. They'll never cite statistics. They'll never often even cite quotes. Sometimes they will, and they'll be handpicked. But it is a misinformation campaign to conflate Jewish voters with Zionist interests.
This is from Adam Johnson's piece in These Times. Two recent polls, this is in August, a July Zenith research poll shows Mamdani with a 17-point lead with New York Jewish voters, with 43% of the total, compared to 26% for Cuomo, 15% for Adams, 9% for Sliwa. You could argue that if all of Eric Adams' votes goes for Cuomo, that would be 51%. But the majority in July. Second poll from July, by GQR Research, commissioned by an anti-Mamdani pro-Israel organization, the New York Solidarity Network, found Mamdani leading with Jewish New Yorkers by 12 percentage points. 37% for Mamdani, 25% for Adams, 21% for Cuomo. There have been no public polls released since the primary that shows Mamdani trailing among Jewish voters. I guarantee you, I literally had a conversation with someone 2 days ago that said 70% of Jews in New York are against Mamdani. And I'm like, I haven't seen that poll, but I didn't.
Were you talking to Andrew Cuomo?
Yeah.
No, that was not. I mean, in the assuredness. This yeah. Like definitely 70%. I'm like, hey, don't think so.
Were they older?
Now, the argument could be that he's only getting 30%, and in this instance, it's 37% by the most. But that doesn't mean that 70% are against Mamdani.
No.
That's an absurd framing for it. The majority of Jews support Mamdani.
at the very least, a plurality is what we can definitively say. And I think in ranked choice voting in the primary, a majority of Jewish voters in the primary did support Mamdani. Even Andrew Cuomo said that in the end. But I mean, like, there's also, it's like laziness with the national media, too. Well, they'll see some report that says Jewish voters are against him. And then, you know, that's the claim that they have to put in their piece to be both sides. And it has this kind of effect. But we're going to get true results, and then we'll see how they can keep denying it
after November. Let's do one more clip.
Sure.
And this one comes via, let's see, what number is this? We get so many. Oh, this is from Decoding Fox News. You should follow her on Twitter and support her work. She does a great job. We need more of Decoding Fox News.
Especially because of, like, all these institutions, like Media Matters and stuff. Like,
sued out of existence.
Elon Musk going after them financially. We need independent people like this. So, great job.
Now, this is just stunning. First off, I want you to just sort of contemplate the idea that someone from the Mexican mafia would go on to Jesse Waters' program. Yeah, I work for, like, brutal killers who come into the United States to terrorize people. But at the same time, I also feel like we need to have a voice in the
PR department of the Mexican mafia.
We're getting maligned. I just want people to understand what we're doing. Also, imagine you're a member of Antifa or Antifa, and you're out there and you're like, I want to get my message out. Who do I go to? Oh, Jesse Waters, of course, because I know I can trust these guys at Fox News with any information that would maybe tie me to Antifa right now. We never talk about OPSEC in Antifa. It's just, I was elected the spokesperson, so I got to go out there and do it. But of course, I'm going to keep my identity secret. Well, if both of those scenarios seem unlikely to you, have I got a video for you. This is, again, compilation posted by Decoding Fox News. Scroll up just for a second. I just want to see how she introduces it. Jesse Waters speaks to a man named Eric who claimed he was formerly a member of Antifa. 2 years ago, Waters interviewed Ramon Mundo Mendoza, a former Mexican mafia member. Some folks said the men look similar. This is a side-by-side comparison.
Oh, my God.
Now, their voice is different, but we know how easy. All you need to do is put a Tim Pool voice changer on there to check this out.
You know, mostly recruiting, working with youth, getting, you know, and just going out, spitting out the message. And the thing is, too, you know, a lot of people get into it because they want to.
On the outside, 36 years I've been behind bars, considered extremely violent enough to be recruited by the Mexican mafia prison gang.
You know, so, you know, there's an era, especially when you're younger, that, you know, you're out here and you're doing something, you know, and that's very appealing.
No, sir, I can tell you for a fact. Contrary to that, I kind of laughed when I saw two things. I saw that he had allegedly stated that one of his motives or reasons was to support Black Lives Matter and also to commemorate the Black Hand.
Oh, absolutely. You know, because, you know, you're young and you're idealistic and you feel like you don't have a lot of control in your life, and, you know,
pause it. So yeah, that's one of the things about the Antifa spokespeople. They're very reflective,
mm-hmm.
and they realize, like, so much of what we're doing is really just because we're young, We hang out with the youth.
We're rascals and knuckleheads.
We hang out with the youth. And you know how it is when you're young. You're rambunctious. A lot of times it's really just about us getting energy out.
It's all grab ass.
Yeah, we like to think we're doing something important. But really, it's really just an excess energy. One of the things, maybe if we did more exercise. Like one of the things we try and do in between protesting, just so that we get the energy out, is we all we join Crunch or some similarly situated gym and work out the angst, and then we stop working out for a couple weeks, and then we go out, and that's just
we let it build up.
Yeah, exactly. This is just amazing.
And you feel like you don't have a lot of control in your life, and you know, so if you can go out there and you know. Make yourself a hassle, then that's better than being an anonymous kid.
Which is the official tattoo of the Mexican Mafia prison gang. Well, first of all, he, like many Mexican Mafia members, were anti-black. That was part and parcel of who he was as a bad guy, as a gang member. And records will reflect that. Number two, he cannot at this time ever pretend to represent the black hand.
So it would have been about ninth grade or so, get on a few years. Growing up in Seattle, we had those the riots in 99. And yeah, I was ready to go, man. I had little Molotov cocktails in my bedroom and a copy of the Anarchist Cookbook that I had photoshopped.
The Mexican Mafia prison gang. Because he's persona non grata.
Pause it for a
36.
Second. So in ninth grade, he had photoshopped. Did he mean photocopied?
I don't know.
Why would you photoshop it?
I keep Molotov cocktails in my bedroom all the time. By the way, my name is Emily Antifa.
Oh, wow. That's... I can't believe Emma went away.
I'm still here.
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
I have all this inside information on the Mexican cartels.
Oh, my God. What's the guy that we had play the Mexican mafia guy? Can we get him back for Antifa? It's been 15 months. Isn't that going
to
be enough?
To northern Minnesota.
Oh.
Mexican mafia guy. I've been in the Mexican mafia for about 13 years now.
Well, I think he was. I think the story was that he was recruited.
Because he was so violent.
He was so violent. I was completely out of control, let me tell you. But I appreciate the opportunity to come on here. You know, one of the things is you want to be heard, and that's why I really appreciate your time on here.
It was like, Mr. Mundo, could you not highlight the anti-black stuff? We're trying to make you unsympathetic to boxers.
Yeah, the audience is like, this guy sounds kind of has a good perspective on the kids.
I didn't know I liked the Mexican mafia so much.
They don't really stand for anything. They're just listless. Like, don't worry too much about the protests of the streets, Grandpa. They don't have anything to say at all.
Michael Sir Palin, big hello fellow radicals energy.
Yes.
Totally.
The protest footage they were using was a bunch of Lebanese flags.
What?
You didn't see the
Lebanese flags? I thought those were Palestinian flags.
Go back.
What? Hold on. Where is he? There? Oh, well, there's some Lebanese flags. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There were some Palestinian flags there, too.
It would have been...
And Mexican flags. Oh, so many scary ethnicities for the audience.
And are you authorized to come on as a spokesperson? Well, I'm actually the acting spokesperson. We haven't had our meeting yet, but I am authorized as the acting spokesperson for Antifa.
I just need to wear a green hat so know that I'm not fully nominated.
Right. I like to wear a hat that is completely nondescript so nobody notices me. If you wear one with a logo, then people take a second look at you. But here, I need to...
You know how Antifa, they get their clothes at a gas station.
Also, do you like my mask? It's part bandana. It's a little bit more stylish. A lot of people just wear the straight black, and it's like, we've seen that before. It's boring. But you want to get out there. You want to engage.
You
want to
stick out in a riot.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, he's the one with the bandana, black mask. That's a classic. It is a classic black box slash bandana strategy. We're just like, you're going out to protest. Yes, you want to be anonymous, but you also, why not be fashionable? There's no reason not to.
No, the bandana thing is classic conservative guy that didn't want to look gay in a mask.
Yeah.
It's not gay if my chin is not covered by the face diaper. It's just the bandana, like you'd wear on a farm.
The amount of family members.
Go to the part in this where he says, left is best. That's when he...
So good news for the Fox News audience. Fox will continue to lie to you as long as there isn't a major company that will sue them for billions of dollars if they do so for
besmirching
them.
The legal department in the Mexican mafia might have something to say about that.
All right. We got to read a couple of items.
She's the Abuelita of the Mexican mafia.
Yes.
Sean from Cali, social security question for you, Sam. Got a guy at work claiming he has a buddy who retired to the Philippines saying he's ineligible for his social security by being in a foreign country. The only information I could find is they won't pay to hostile countries like North Korea, Cuba, a country with sanctions. I couldn't find any reason for the Philippines to be on the list. Any opinion? I have not heard of any type of prohibition for getting Social Security if you've retired to a foreign country. I feel like a lot of people do that. New Jersey mailman, I just want to point out all these ICE guys brutalizing your neighbors, killing your neighbors, and breaking up your neighbors' families for free. They aren't getting paid. Most of them are dipping into their retirement so they can continue this job. Huh? Oh, I don't think that's true. They're getting a bunch of cash.
You talking about the shutdown, though?
Oh, right now they're not getting paid, but they will get back pay.
Yes, yes.
They will get back pay. Matt from Denver. Sam, have you never heard of special ops frogmen? Those innocent ICE officers are clearly afraid of that member of the Navy SEALs who clearly trained in underwater assaults. Not Nick Fuentes. Hello, Sam. I'm not being paid by Iran or you to write IMs to contribute to your show. Just a fan, and I'm paying you to let me have access to your IM chat function on the show, so we're clear. Okay. Cauliflower, Kermit voice. Nobody cared who I was until I put on the mask. Bane level threat. I can see why they need the National Guard.
Why are there so many fascists?
Ryan.
Breaking that out.
Laura from Somerville. Somerville just won our fight against ADL and their local minions who tried to keep our divestment question off the ballot. Our local organ, Somerville for Palestine, collected over 11,000 signatures from voters. Nice. Charlie Scher. I'm sure we in the trans community can give Mrs. Gnome and her ilk pointer on what to do when you're banned from the restroom. Nice. Graded left hook. Following the Manchester synagogue attack on Yom Kippur, the government is instigating a crackdown on Gaza protests. The Green leader brought up in Manchester and Jewish, putting up the best fight of any political figure against it. Oregon. Didn't I say Oregon?
Oregon, and you said Oregon, which is a classic New England way to say it.
Oh, but I say Oregon usually. I usually get it right.
You did say Oregon.
But you got it wrong this time.
Okay, Oregon. Sorry.
I noticed it and let it go.
Me too.
Well, maybe you shouldn't, because apparently I'm getting we completely
grind the show to
persecuted
a halt
because of it. Being totally persecuted. I would spray you in the face right now with pepper spray if you were near me. retro movie lover. I would love it if the Majority Report could carve out a little time once a week in the fun half to discuss what movies we're watching or to recommend. Might help to stay a step away from the hard issues for a couple of minutes. Yeah, we got to, you know, we used to do that with Matthew Film Guy, and we just literally got out of the habit. But
it'd be nice if more than one good film came out a year, though, because that's a tough segment.
Yeah, that's true. There were some good ones this year. I mean, One Battle After Another is the best one I've seen so far. But I guess I saw the Brutalist last year. Anyway.
All right. Three more. Jamie from the UK. Hey, Sam, Emma, Matt, Brian. Just wanted to make a guest suggestion for the show. My suggestion is Zach Polanski, the progressive new leader for the UK Green Party. As a Green Party member, I can say with confidence the Green Party is like our version of the DSA and the real left-wing alternative. Like, unlike the Your Party shambles, which apart from Jeremy Corbyn and Zara Sultana, is primarily made up of right-wing independents who support things like anti-abortion, anti-trans, anti-queer measures, as well as being against taxing private schools. Left is best.
I don't know enough to say, but, you know, other UK left-wing people I've followed do not agree with that assessment, but we'll look into it.
Ty Worm. Can't believe they got my cop uncle on Jesse Waters. And the final I am of the day. Can't local DAs prosecute these agents for violating local laws and force these idiots to argue qualified immunity? It's a good question. It's a good question if there's the political will to do that in some of these places. We'll see. Hopefully, increasingly so. Brian, Matt, in abstention. Brian held down the fort for half the show solo. Emma, great job today. Folks, see you tomorrow.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm going to get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and